Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm very happy to be back at PI. Indeed, today, so my talk title is The Toft Equation. It's a quantum spectral curve. Probably have to explain what the Toft equation is, what a spectral curve is, and I'm gonna talk about quantum as well, just to be on the safe side. If you are wondering, this number goes up to 22. Here is the content page. So first, I'm going to say a few words about my personal motivation for this program, which started, I think, around 2015. I'm going to tell you about segmented strings, which play a crucial role here. Bipartite graphs, which I also worked on back in 2005 with Ami Hanani and Sebastian Franco and others. And then, after developing this technology, I'm going to talk about the simplest case. So the simplest case is a very simple segmented string. It has 1 degree of freedom. What could be simpler than that? Well, it's still pretty complicated, as you'll see. And finally, I tell you how this is related to the Toft equation. Good. Any questions? Please stop me anytime. Okay, so here's the motivation. Let me go backwards. Okay, so I'm gonna be studying strings in ADS. Okay, so this can be interesting for many reasons. One of the reasons is that there can be nonlinear waves on a string, and you can study things like wave turbulence using a nice integrable setup. And so I wrote a paper 5 years ago about this, 6 years ago. Yeah. Time passes fast. And you can study things like energy cascades and all sorts of things in a context where you do numerical calculations, but everything is exact. So there are no numerical errors accumulating as time progresses. Okay, so as the students pointed out to me, this is also very important in ADS-CFT, strings in ADS, obviously, short strings, long strings, and there are many experts in the audience. And my original motivation was, it grew out from some chats with Douglas Stanford, and I was interested in their work with Schenker on chaos, scrambling, and all of that. So it turns out that the string worksheet behaves as a toy model for gravity. And Jan de Boer and a few other people, we wrote this paper where we showed that the string does saturate the bound in the Lyapunov exponent. Right, so there is this famous bound by Maldacena, Schenker, and Stanford. Good. So that's the motivation for studying strings in ADS. What about quantum spectral curves? Okay, I don't think I need to advertise this here. But since the string motion in ADS is integrable, we can use the whole machinery of integrability. And spectral curves play a crucial role, as the students have just learned, in integrable theories. And it turns out that the systems can be oftentimes quantized just by promoting the spectral curves to finite difference equations. So we just quantize the variables, and as you see, we are going to get difference equations. Not differential equations, but difference equations. Okay, I really think this is a different way of quantizing systems, and it's very interesting. And I should probably put another dot here. I'm just really trying to understand quantum spectral curves in ADS-CFT. Okay, so that's, I'm trying to apply this machinery in the simplest possible case. Any questions about why we are here? Okay, so here is our playground, ADS. Okay, this is the hyperbolaid, and we are gonna work sometimes in the ambient space. And we are going to restrict ourselves to the simplest case, which is ADS3. So this ambient space will be R2, 2. Two time directions, two spatial directions. And ADS is on some hyperbolaid within this space. OK, and I'm going to be interested in the Nambu-Goto string, moving on ADS3. And these are the equations of motion. And this y is a function of sigma and tau, worksheet variables. And these equations are nonlinear partial differential equations, are supplemented by the Virasoro constraints. OK, so this is pretty complicated, as the students have just learned. So I asked the question, can we simplify the system? OK, the string has infinitely many degrees of freedom. That's too many. So let's try to make it a finite number. And here's the idea. Take linear string segments, like a straight line, and glue it to some other segment. OK? And glue it to yet another segment, et cetera. So this way, you get a piecewise linear string. And this can be generalized to ADS3 as well, where these segments will be ADS2 patches on the worksheet. And they have one characteristic feature, is that their normal vector is a constant vector. So in ADS3, which is within R2,2, you have the embedding function, and you have the sigma and tau derivatives. So these are three vectors, and there is a perpendicular fourth vector. And that's the normal vector. And on the patch, this is going to be constant. OK, so I wrote a paper in 2015 in Princeton. And also in Princeton, Gupser and collaborators wrote practically the same paper. I don't know what happened there. Let's visualize these segments. So this cylinder, this gray cylinder, the solid cylinder, is ADS3. It has a boundary, which is the side of the cylinder. This elementary segment that I'm talking about is this green surface. OK, it's a static solution spanning the diagonal in ADS3. Obviously, it's a solution due to symmetries. And you can boost it, rotate it, et cetera. That you get a three-parameter family of elementary segments. On the Poincaré patch, here's the boundary of the Poincaré patch. Here's the z-direction. These solutions, this green curve on a time slice, looks like a semicircle. So the way it moves, you'll see that in an animation soon enough, it shrinks to some small size, and then it starts increasing again in size. That's the elementary string segment. And we try to glue many of these together. OK, so there are two, if you want, these are some external quarks on the boundary, and they move on these hyperbolas in Minkowski space. Any question about the simplest string solution of all time?
Excuse me.
Yes.
Can you think about the string segment, the rigid rod, which has various degrees of freedom?
For me, it will have no degrees of freedom. It's just a straight line. The degrees of freedom will be the kinks between the segments. And these are mainly longitudinal degrees of freedom, as you see. Let's see some animations. OK, so I could not include that in the PDF. OK, that's not what I want. OK, so here is a simple solution with three segments. Here is one segment, so this is an arc. Here's another one, and here's another one. And these ticks denote some kinks between them. And sometimes they collide. And then the normal vector of the middle segment changed. So you can figure out what this change must be, and then you can kind of generate the string evolution indefinitely. OK, so that's the simplest one. Let's see a more complicated one. Now, this is in global ADS, right? So you have this hyperbolic disk, and you can play with this. You can also approximate any smooth or non-smooth string solution using segmented strings. So here is a string hanging in ADS. That's the dashed line, describes some elliptic function. And I approximated it with a bunch of bunch of string segments, and the kinks between them move with the speed of light. And I have one more, again, the same hanging string solution, but now I quenched the system, I moved one of the endpoints, and you can again follow this. The wave moves left, from left to right, etc., and I followed it for thousands of such oscillations. There is no error in the calculation. This is an exact solution. Okay, maybe you notice that there are some cusps here now. These are kind of invisible. Let me go back maybe here. So at some point, the wave breaks and cusps are created. They come in pairs because this is where the normal vector changes. These are topological objects, so they have to come in pairs. There's a nice story here, but I don't have time today to talk about this. Okay, so these are some examples for segmented strings. Any questions so far? Exactly. So this is an integrable system, and typically, almost always, there are exact discretizations.
Yeah.
And
discrete number
infinity. Say again? Not in this talk, but that's on the future work slide, the last slide, 22. So I'll say a few words about that later.
And also, in that last image, like, it seemed very much not discretized, so I thought it was like a very small discretization, or the kink was the point where the 2 seconds of this somehow the kink signaling out the discretization.
So in this animation, so there are 500 segments. This is the last one. I wasn't supposed to show you that one yet. Here, you were talking about this.
So
there are 500 segments that you can see. So that's why it looks smooth. Okay, so this is pretty basic. Only took me 2 years. This, however, is something more interesting. So now we are going to switch gears and reformulate segmented strings using something called celestial variables. And instead of talking about normal vectors and the string embedding function, et cetera, we are going to talk about some more abstract variables, which will still describe the string motion perfectly well. Okay, so here's the worksheet. A part of a patch of the worksheet. So this is an ADS2 patch. This is tau, this is sigma. And such a patch is characterized by, well, it's a diamond stretching between 4 vertices. And these vertices are where the kinks collide, right? So a patch is created, the kinks move apart, and they collide with some other kinks. Kinks move back in, and the patch disappears. Okay? So these Vs, the vertices, are mapped into R2,2. This is a linear space. So I can just subtract vertices from one another. V11 minus V10 is this P3 vector in R2,2. And same for the other guys. So what is the number go-to action? Well, it's just the area of the string. So let's try to compute the area of this patch. Now you can like rotate these P difference vectors by 90 degrees. And now you can think of it as a scattering diagram, right? Some Feynman diagram. So whatever answer I have here will only depend on the Mandelstam variables, which you can write down. And in some very highly symmetrical case, you can actually do the calculation of the area, and then you have this expression. Okay, log of U over S squared, which is now covariant. So now you know the solution for any of these P's. Okay, so these kinks have to move with the speed of light. Why? I told the students earlier, because if they don't, then you can just move into a frame where it's static, and that's obviously not going to be a solution for long. And you lose this piecewise linearity condition. So all the kinks move with the speed of light, therefore all of these P vectors are null vectors. And then if you know about the spinner helicity formalism, then you immediately write these vectors as products of two-component spinners. So now we are in R2, 2. So these spinners are real. Two-component spinners, real numbers. I'm not cheating. And you can rewrite this expression, the area of the patch, using these spinners. Notice that the tilde variables, lambda tildes, won't appear. And that's, you can think about why that is. The reason is that these p's must add up to zero with the correct signs. Some momentum conservation allows, momentum conservation allows you to get rid of the lambda tildes or the lambdas, whatever you want. This is, by the way, special to ADS 3. Won't work in ADS 5. Okay, so what else do we see? Here's like lambda 1 appears in the numerator, also appears in the denominator. So if I multiply lambda 1 by a number, that drops out. Same for lambda 2, etc. That means that this expression, the area, can only depend on sort of the phases, the direction where these two-component vectors point. So the final result for the area must depend on the ratio of the two spinner components, the up and the down components. If you want to interpret or write down this in terms of this p vector, then these are that's the ratio that you should take. In Minkowski space, there would be an I somewhere here. So that's the difference. Okay, and in terms of these A celestial variables, that's the area. Okay, so there is an A celestial variable sitting on each of these kinks. So 4 in this picture, and you take this cross ratio, a log of that, and you get the area. Okay, so that was a story in this paper of mine some years ago. It's just the difference. P1 is V01 minus V00. This is the location of the kink word line. And the general worksheet, okay, I don't have a picture of that, but it's on the worksheet. The worksheet looks like this, right? So, and we are just talking about one patch right now. But we could just add up all the patches, all the contributions from the patches and see what we get. We get some action. And once I have the action, I have the Euler-Lagrange equations of motion, which are these guys. It looks simple enough, but it's nonlinear. And this equation relates 5 nearest neighbors, like this cross here. So if the enemy gives me 2 rows of these celestial variables, then I can now generate the time evolution. Okay, it's a discrete integrable system, and it has many nice features. This equation was known to mathematicians. They just did not know that it described string motion in ADS3. Okay, so I put these white and black boxes on the edges to like sort of indicate that the celestial variables live here. And white and black just indicates the direction, left or right moving kink.
So what, is there any physical meaning to the fact that you have like, I guess, a hot shell or like momentum conserving?
This is the way I discretized the string. I think there is, and there was a question earlier, so this would not work in Euclidean signature, right? I needed these kinks to move with the speed of light, otherwise this whole thing doesn't work. Good. What are we doing with time? Okay, so, yes.
Are these equations and functions going from some the least action principle, or is there a
the number go to action? number go to action.
But like discrete number go to action, so we discretize.
No, the if you solve this, you get some string solutions, some piecewise linear string in ADS, and that satisfies Hamilton's principle coming from the number go to action. It's not, it's singular. It does not satisfy at those points the any equation of motion, because that's a differential equation, but it satisfies the, it extremizes the action, right? That's the general rule.
So it's a differential equation with 1 over derivative.
At the kink, yeah, there are no derivatives. But still the action is extremized. So I'm happy. If Hamilton is happy, I'm happy.
Sorry, in terms of boundary conditions, what do we impose?
The only condition here that we have to impose is that the kinks do move with the speed of light. And it's a very simple condition that the normal vector of this string times the normal vector of that string, those two normal vectors, n1 times n2 is equal to 1. That's it. Or minus 1.
When you evaluate the action.
I'll be talking about closed strings.
Closed strings.
Good. So let's say we solve this equation of motion for the celestial variables, again, which live on the edges, the kinks. How do we reconstruct the string embedding? That's what people really are interested in. Okay, so here's the artist's impression of the string worksheet. Time progresses upwards. And I did not draw all the kinks, just like a row. And it's also drawn here. And this P and the P prime, these are the same points. So it's a closed string. You're moving around the worksheet. OK, so P, Q, et cetera, these are space-time points in R2,2. N1, N2, et cetera, these are normal vectors, also in R2,2. Space-time points like P, P squares to minus 1, N1 squares to plus 1. That's the difference between space-time points and normal vectors. Okay, so if the enemy gives you P and all these red celestial variables, then from P you can compute N1 using this matrix I'm giving you. So this matrix depends on two celestial variables, say B1 and W1, and this is just a simple kind of a reflection formula. From P you can compute N1, and using these celestial variables from N1, you can compute Q, et cetera. You can go around the string, you can go anywhere. You can reconstruct all the points on the segmented string. And there you have the solution up to a global transformation. Okay. Now let's talk about something slightly different. So it's still an integrable model, so you are interested in computing the spectral curve. So how do,
sorry,
yes,
yeah. Something. So just to make sure I understand these kinks. So we are not inserting impurities or deforming the string. It's the same.
Number go to solution.
It has nothing.
Nothing there, except for the kink itself.
Right.
Yeah, it's just.
Okay. What is the simplest solution? What's the minimum number of kinks I could have? Can I have
for closed strings? Yeah. That's the second part of my talk. You'll see. I'll tell you the answer. It will be on the slide.
Probably tell why I'm puzzled, and you tell me why I should not be puzzled. So I know that there are simple solutions in ADS, and we know, for example, this folded string is a string that is rotating just in ADS. And
yeah.
Even the folded string is not as simple as saying, as what you are describing, right? So I'm just a bit confused.
Right. Yeah.
The folded string that I forgot.
Well, so you're thinking about this GKP solution, for instance.
Yes.
I don't. Yeah. So that's some kind of folded string, but it has some spins, so it's not as simple as these are.
So these are simpler than this GKP rotation.
Oh yes.
I see.
Well, in some sense.
Okay, I should know that. Okay. I
think so. The GK, the Singe Gordon vacuum. That's the this rotating string, but you can rotate in two different ways, right? In ADS3. And here, the elementary segment does not rotate. It's just the diagonal static solution. So from that perspective, this is these are kind of singular solutions.
Maybe that's what I'm confused. You say that the endpoints move at the speed of light.
Yes.
At the same time, you are saying it's static. So I'm missing something.
I need a white. OK, so here is a slice of ADS, 3. That's a solution. It's the static solution. But I can also boost it. That's going to also be a solution. And then you're going to have some oscillation between this and that configuration. It will oscillate forever. So the string can move, but if you just, you can always just sort of boost it so that it's just a static solution in your coordinate system.
But these static solutions, typically, they are not just number words. There, I put a quark and an antiquark at 20 points, right?
I mean, this has, a static solution has to be a solution just by a Z2 symmetry here. And you mean here? Wow. Oh, sorry, you meant the boundaries.
Yes,
yes. Yes. These, if your string ends on a boundary, then it will have to end on some quarks.
Right, so there are some extra stuff on the string. It's not
yes, but again, so here I'll be talking about closed strings mainly.
So you will let the endpoints go and the string
will I'll show you the animation that I wasn't going to show you. Is such a string which is closed and it does not touch the boundary. Good. Any other questions?
Well, maybe just to clarify what we did here. So, yeah, we reconstructed some information in terms of another information.
Yes. So these red numbers are given to you. These are real numbers. The question is, what is the string embedding? You can use this matrix, which came from somewhere, and you can jump from one point to the neighboring normal vector to the neighboring point, dot, dot, dot.
And sorry, this question just arises out of my own ignorance. What is the difference between the data that's colored red and what a string embedding should convey? What is the two pieces of data? What such that we're mapping one into the other?
I mean, it's just both of them describe the string embedding at the end of the day.
Okay.
So if this P is fixed, then the string embedding is fixed.
Okay.
But of course, you can move this P around. That's not contained in the red data.
Okay.
It is on R2,2 point. It literally is that point on the worksheet and in target space. Maybe I should point out, I'm not going to really talk about this, but if the enemy gives you these two rows of celestial variables, it's not always good. Because for a closed string, the string, my laptop is lazy. The string has to close. It cannot look like this, right? And that implies three real constraints on the celestial variables. I have a conjecture, but I'm not going to talk about that, how to describe these constraints. I'll put that on the summary slide. If you're given just random numbers, then the string, and you do this reconstruction, then the string won't close. In some sense, so there was lambda tilde spinners, and there are some other celestial variables, and they won't be periodic anymore.
Should I use like the ADS3 in the embedding space, and then I'm doing each of these guys as just being like the null vectors?
Oh, these are null vectors in embedding space. That's precisely right. Okay, I don't have any of the details here, but you can compute the Lux matrix. Here is again a patch of the worksheet, and what the Lux matrix does, it's a 2x2 SL2 matrix, is that it gets you from the vertex to the middle of the patch. And then you can continue, et cetera. And the Lux matrix contains the adjacent celestial variables here, B and W. In terms of B and W, you have this matrix. X is some spectral parameter. Okay, and there are some nice figures that I'm not gonna explain right now. So now if you want to compute the monodromy around, as you go around the string, you just have to multiply these two by two matrices. Okay, so that's not too complicated. Any questions about this slide? So we, here is again the closed string, and we have lots of patches attached to each other. And I just take these Lux matrices and I multiply them, and I get the total monodromy as I go around the string. Okay, so I mentioned that before. So for generic values of the celestial variables, the B's and W's, the string won't close. This closure, if the string does close, it's equivalent to saying that omega at this special value for the spectral parameter is the identity matrix, 2x2 identity matrix. If you satisfy that, then you're good. Okay, so once we have this, we can just compute the spectral curve for any segmented string. And segmented strings, they are then set in the space of all string solutions in ADS3. So this is perfectly general. Okay.
Sorry.
Yes, yes.
Let me understand this. So the picture on the left is not the boundary of ADS, right?
No, this is a worksheet.
And right. This is all in ADS.
This is within ADS as now. So time is like moving, is the vertical direction. You think of a three-dimensional space here, and there is this sheet somewhere.
Yes. And there we see a bunch of diamonds connected, right?
Yes.
And the string is what? Is the upper
part? Is the gray thing. The worksheet is this gray surface.
The worksheet is the gray surface, good. Okay, so the string is the dashed line that goes in the middle of the diamonds. And at a given time, right? At a given time.
Yes, on the time slice, if you take that time slice.
And any smooth curve I can approximate by these zigzags, and then let it evolve. Instead of describing the continuum, I describe the zigzags following this integral model. And then this, if the number of points was going to become dense, like Shoy was saying, then this would be exactly the same as solving the equation motion in ADS. But if the number of points is finite, it is
then
a subset of the solutions of the usual Nambu-Goto.
It is a solution of the usual Nambu-Goto, well, the action principle, yeah. Yeah, I don't have the picture here, but I can show it to you after the talk, how to approximate a smooth string using segmented strings.
No, using many, it's clear. It's what you drew there. But I'm just saying, if you have like four, my question, would it still...
I'll have that example, four kinks. That's precisely the simplest segmented string.
Okay.
It's coming up. We are at 10. I have 22.
Okay,
so let me talk about something completely different. And this is bringing back good memories from 2005. I wrote my first paper on so-called brain tilings, which for this talk, these are just doubly periodic bipartite graphs. Doubly periodic means that it's periodic in both the vertical and horizontal direction. Here's a fundamental domain, and you just have to take it and repeat it, and you get the graph. And bipartite means that black nodes are joined to white vertices and vice versa. Okay, so if you have that, then you can play all sorts of things. So first of all, back in 2005, these the graphs were sort of dual graph theoretical duals to quivers, right? So if you know about 4D or lower dimensional n equal 1 or higher and theories, then these are encoded, the Lagrangian is encoded in terms of the superpotential, which are related to these vertices here, and the gauge groups, which are related to the plockets here. And there was also some bifundamental field, and those are the edges of this tiling. Okay, so that's a completely different story, but the mathematics is somewhat similar. These graphs are also related to on-shell diagrams. Well, these are periodic, but that's the only difference. Okay, so you can look at this long paper where Nima and friends study on-shell diagrams and then draw these sorts of pictures. So sometimes it's said that the best invariant of a graph is the graph itself. So what do we do with that? Well, here we are lucky because these tilings have a better invariant than themselves. You can take the adjacency matrix of some kind of dressed adjacency matrix that I'm going to show you on the next slide. Take the determinant. That's going to give you some Laurent polynomial. And you take the so-called Newton polygon of the polynomial, which will look something like this for this particular case. And that is invariant. That is an invariant object. Invariant under what? Well, there are some natural transformations that you can do on the tiling. Like you can take a square that's somewhere in the graph, like here, for instance. And then you can attach some extra edges there. This transformation is sometimes called urban renewal or Posnikov move or spider move. It has like 10 different names, quiver mutation. And you can do other kind of transformations. And these little diagrams are invariant under these transformations. In the context of n equal 1 theories, these were just the toric diagrams of some Calabi-Yau threefolds. Okay.
What is the power of this variable in the Laurent polynomial?
So that's going to be the spectral curve. Let me just first tell you a little bit more about how to compute this. So here's some sample graph. It doesn't matter what the graph is. And the adjacency matrix of this graph is called the Castellane matrix. Okay, so what you do is you number the vertices. So there are three black, three white. So the rows and the columns of the Castellane matrix will be these black and white vertices. And then you look at, for instance, okay, I forgot which one is white, which one is black, the rows or the columns, but we'll figure it out soon. So one is connected to one, right? So there is a plus one weight here. So that explains this one here. But one is also connected to itself by crossing the boundary. So because we cross the boundary, that edge carries an x extra weight denoted by x here. So the total weight is 1 plus x. And so on, you can write down all these components, all the elements of the matrix. And that's called the Castellane matrix. It is a function of two variables, x and y, because you have two boundaries for the fundamental domain. Now you take the determinant of the Castellane matrix, and you get some polynomial like that. And how do I get this diagram from this polynomial? Well, you just have to take all the terms and look at the exponents, right? So this is 0, 0 in the x, y plane. This is minus 2, 0. This is minus 1, 0. This is 1, 0. This is 0, 1, etc. And these define all the points in this, what turns out to be a convex diagram. So that's the Newton polygon of this polynomial. Okay, this was just some random matrix or graph. What are the graphs which will play a role for segmented strings? Any ideas?
Square graphs.
Square lattice, precisely right. Yay. How, I don't have a figure, but just for you, I'll explain why that is, or why that could be the case. Okay, so this is the worksheet of the string with all the kinks. And these are, here, two kink lines collide, right? So these are some kind of composite edges or vertices. So let's resolve those. Put little squares here, everywhere. and let's say this is a black node, this is a white node, white, black, so it's bipartite. And same here, black, white, black. It's counterintuitive because you have a blackboard, so this is what I call the white node, this is what I call the black node. Okay, and then these are the same colors, so you can just collapse these two vertices and so on everywhere, and you get a square lattice.
So the analogy is different, but I don't care. Like eventually the lines between them are on-shell momentum.
So yeah, so this is an on-shell diagram, but that's not the brain tiling, because this sigma direction we're going to keep. But the vertical direction for us is an auxiliary direction. That's not tau. Okay, so here I should not, I did not remember that I had this figure. But here's a general brain tiling for a segmented string consisting of n segments. In this direction, it has two tiles. In that direction, it has n. So if you have n segments, you have 2 times n square lattice, doubly periodic square lattice. Okay, the fact that it's 2 in this direction has to do with that we are in ADS3. In ADS5, it might be more tiles.
And so second square lattice is called Fisher decorated square lattice.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic.
Fisher lattice.
I'll look it up. Thanks. Okay, so what does this have to do with segmented strings? So far, there is no relationship. We're going to use this fantastic formula, the cross ratio, and we're going to plug in some celestial variables. So the advantage of taking cross ratios of celestial variables is that these are going to be invariant under SL2, right? So you can do any SO2,2 transformation on the string, and the result is invariant. Okay, so it turns out that you can define some phase variables or some variables, dynamical variables attached to the faces of this tiling. And these are some cross ratios of the celestial variables. Like the P's are this and the Q's are something more complicated. And they satisfy some Y system equation of motion under the transformation where you take the urban renewal of all of these squares. So just to remind you, the urban renewal was this transformation. So you do this on every single tile in the tiling. There is some associated change in the dynamical variables. And that's one time step in the segmented string. Okay, and we already know that the determinant of the Castellan matrix is invariant under this motion, under this urban renewal transformation. So this determinant is naturally giving you a curve which is invariant, and this is the spectral curve for the segmented string. You can also just check explicitly that this transformation is compatible with the equation of motion that I showed you earlier. Okay, so we managed to recast our equations into this kind of abstract form. Let's try to apply all of this to your favorite case, the simplest segmented string, which turns out to have 4 segments. Maybe I'll show you the animation. So that's the motion in the center of mass frame. And here are the snapshots. And so the string in this frame is characterized by 2 length scales, this one and this one. This can be different.
Sir,
yeah.
The dynamics, is it discrete or continuous time?
Time is continuous here. But in this description, this is a discrete step because it describes you, you know, Like from here to there, that's a discrete step. So you can concentrate on a discrete integrable model, which is embedded into a continuum integrable model.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm trying to understand it. I'm an outsider. Now, Fisher solved icing model on that lattice. And he constructed Castellan matrix and so on, found the exact solution.
But that was a Euclidean lattice, wasn't it?
Sorry?
That was a Euclidean space.
Euclidean. It was just classical icing model on that lattice, which became Fisher lattice. And he also constructed Castellan. So I'm wondering whether this suggests that, you know, that comes to my question. Whenever you have ADS CFT correspondence, in the boundary you have a Hamiltonian or you have some field theory or quantum mechanics. What is the corresponding linear approach? Can you?
We don't have a duality here. There is no boundary theory, whatever. I'm only looking at a string within ADS. So I don't have a correspondence.
Can you get it? Because from.
That's on the future work slide, the last slide.
Because it looks as if from the it looked like icing model with generalized variables sitting on the
there, yeah, so in some limit, there is a non-compact spin chain with two sites, which is related to this particular.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know in the general case. OK, so let's look at this. Here is the string. Here's the worksheet. So these dashed lines are identified because it's a closed string. And this is the corresponding brain tiling. So, okay, so again, these black and white dots have nothing to do with these celestial variables, these boxes. And using this machinery that I just told you about, you can compute the spectral curve, and it turns out to be this.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So there are four segments, but in the diamond picture, there are two diamonds.
But if you cut it with a general time slice, you see one, two, three, four. If you take a time slice where those are precisely either this or that, yeah. Okay, so this might not be the best spectral parameter that you want to use. You can go through a chain of transformations. The middle one is the Zhukovsky transformation that you should go on Wikipedia and read about it, especially if you're into airplanes. And then you end up with some other, the same spectral curve in terms of some other parameters. And this P and U, P is the quasi-momentum, and U is a conjugate variable. Okay, so I managed to separate the variables. Of course, this has one degree of freedom, so why did I do that? Oh, and by the way, along the way, I introduced this G parameter, which is just kind of the size of ADS, the usual G in ADS CFT. Okay, let's remember this equation. Here's the phase space. First of all, delta was the energy of the string, and you can just express delta from that spectral curve equation, and you get this kind of Hamiltonian. This looks like a Reisenauer-Schneider type Hamiltonian, except you don't have any Weierstrass functions in here. You have something else. But if you know that story, that you can define some other generators, and they satisfy an SL2 algebra. So this was zero in the Reisenauer-Schneider case. Here it's non-zero. Okay, so once you have this, you know that P and U are conjugate variables. You can draw this stream plot of the phase space. And this blue part is not there. It's not part of the configuration space or the phase space. These two lines I set in this picture, I set G equal 1, right? So this is 2G and minus 2G. These two points are where the segments collide, so those extremal snapshots. Okay, then they also satisfy this equation. So what you have on the HPB space is this hyperboloid. And the actual phase space is you take these two golden parts and you glue them together. So it is bounded from below, which is a good thing. If you know about coadjoint orbit quantization, there are all sorts of issues there, because the hyperbole is of course not bounded from below. And H generates just rotation of this hyperboloid, some rigid rotation. You move from here to the other side, jump to the other edge, and you move all the way here, and you jump here, and so on. So that's the classical motion. Okay, so I told you that the string can be parametrized by this length and that length, but only delta appears in the spectral curve. So you cannot reconstruct from the, and this was one of the student questions, maybe yours. You cannot reconstruct the string embedding perfectly well from just the spectral curve because information is missing here. Here you only have delta, but here you have two parameters. So the spectral curve is associated to a family of segmented strings. For instance, you can sort of squash the string and you can set one of these numbers to zero, these sizes to zero, and then you get a folded string, which now just describes a string segment between two particles, and the particles just move like that with the speed of light in one dimension. Okay, and now if you also take a flat space limit is where you take g goes to infinity, then in this limit, this string is related to the Toft equation. Okay, so how? Here's the string again. You can write down some two-particle Hamiltonian, some kinetic term, and the potential is,
yeah. What's the operator of the Cardano to this string?
Like if it was in ADS CFT? Excellent question, I don't know. This could be maybe some Konishi type, but I don't know.
Not this, the previous guys. The same.
You mean these guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unclear.
So it, you say it doesn't have spin?
It does not have spin.
And it's in ADS
3. It's precisely this closing constraint forces the spin to vanish for some reason.
So it must be an operator, probably with if you have forecasts, maybe that like four scalars, and then a bunch of derivatives, but there are as many derivatives. It's not forming a symmetric traceless tensor, but something without spin, like D plus and D minus appear in the same number.
Yeah, probably. I think, I can't recall, but Gupser had in the original paper.
So it should be scalars with a bunch of derivatives, but forming boxes somehow, right? Contracted in a
yeah,
scalar
possible.
Way.
Well, these are classical solutions. So in ADS CFT, you have a smooth string in ADS. So who knows? Here I'm severely restricting the phase space. Already at the classical level, I'm trying to quantize that. So I don't know if there are actual boundary operators dual to this. For a very long string, yes, maybe.
No, but classically, this is a solution of the string in ADS 5 times S5. ADS 3 is a subsector of ADS 5. And if
that
you
is true.
Move in ADS 3, you stay in ADS 3. Right?
That's true.
So you can just forget about the rest.
But you can just take this 1D phase space or 2D phase space and quantize it. And
no,
that's
not for the quantization, but for understanding what the operator is, because you have a classical string, right? You could take this solution and compute the spectral curve the solution, not in this sense that you are describing, but in the standard sense, right? That for each classical solution, you can construct a Lax pair. I think it's what is in the blackboard, probably.
No, it is. It is in that sense. Just recast in that in this language. I mean, I started with the Lax pair and I computed.
So this P would be the quasi-momentum in the Lax.
Yeah, it is precisely the quasi-momentum.
Okay.
I just did. I had to give half of the story, but
So this P is a Markov of something.
Yeah, this is the trace of omega that I gave you is a cosine of maybe 2 cosine of p, yeah.
Okay, we should tomorrow I'll ask you more.
Okay.
I would expect that if the string doesn't have spin, right, then there should be more than one quasi-momentum, because when you have these strings which just have one spin, they are in this SL2 sector, then you have one quasi-momentum. If your string is a little bit more complicated, if you have, maybe I'm wrong. Okay, I'll ask it.
I would like to know more about the duals, but I did not have in the past 8 years time to think about it.
Sorry, can I ask?
Yes.
If you make a continuous limit, like when you have many of those segments,
yes.
Do you limit it to some long continuous solution?
You can go, yeah, you can approximate any solution.
Like, do you know if there is any famous solution to approximate, like BMN?
Sure, you can do that as well. But I'm talking about the simplest solution, and it is still quite complicated. But this is on the future work slide, so let me postpone it until to the last minute. Okay, because I want to get to the Toft equation, which is in the title of the talk. Okay, so how do we get there? So here is the now we're in flat space, one dimension, right? Two particles, this particle and that particle. And again, this came from collapsing the segmented string into 1D. And that's just the potential between given to you by the string because it's stretched out. And after some canonical transformation, going to some center of mass sort of frame, and going and taking an infinite momentum frame limit, and promoting all of these everything in into an operator, that's how you arrive at the Toft equation. So the wave function, which I denoted by phi of z here, it depends on the z variable, and that is the momentum fraction variable. P1 is the momentum of this quark, and P2 is this quark. So how much momentum does the first quark carry? And it's between 0 and 1. It's restricted to be between 0 and 1. OK, and this ugly-looking integral here comes from the fact that you took an absolute value here. So this is precisely what causes trouble. OK, so this is an older story. Itzhak Bars has lots of papers on this, on the relationship of the Toft equation and all of that to these strings. But what does the Toft equation have to do with our spectral curve? So again, this was our spectral curve, U and P, canonical conjugate variables. It turns out that you have to cut out, on this complex U plane, you have to cut out some middle region. So if this is the U plane, this is 2G, minus 2G, these are special points where the quarks collide, where the two particles collide. And you want to eliminate this bit. You just cut it out, and you define a new variable, which is 0 here and here, negative here, and positive here. So that's defined by this equation here. And so I call it Q. So obviously, you cannot do that on the complex plane. So now we are talking about real U's. And in terms of this new Q spectral parameter, we have this real spectral curve. And P and Q are still conjugate. And I also took the large, the flat space limit, the large G limit, so I had to keep the rescaled energy squared, mu, I think a square is missing here, fixed. And I ended up with this equation, and again, this has an absolute value. Okay, so this is the real spectral curve for the string, a segmented string in flat space. What does it have to do with the Toft equation? Okay, well, it turns out that Zamolodchikov wrote a paper in 2009 where he did some mysterious integral transformation on the Toft equation. You did some kind of generalized Mellin transform. I noticed that I set the quark masses, renormalized masses, to 0 because the kinks move with the speed of light, right? So you switch to some rapidity coordinates and do a Fourier transformation. You get some integral equation, but you can invert that in terms of a finite difference equation, which turns out to be this. Okay, and then they went on, and in this beautiful paper, they analyzed this equation, where this Q now is not the wave function. It's some rescaled wave function, some extra factor here. Okay, so let me look at this equation. It's a difference equation. There's a q plus I, q minus I here, so not a differential equation. But I can compare this with the equation for the classical spectral curve of the string. So how do I take the classical limit where q large, this tangent just becomes some plus or minus sign, right? So that's precisely this absolute value here. So indeed, this reduces to the classical curve in the classical limit. Okay, so what I did in my paper from January is that I gave a kind of an explanation to this equation. Part of this equation, I think maybe with just one of these q plus i's here, was already done by some other people in the 70s. Okay, so there is some story here which has to do with these brain tilings, these doubly periodic bipartite graphs. These Z variable and the conjugate variable can be generalized to ADS. So these were the flat space variables. But tiling variables, these face variables with the cross sections, et cetera, these provide a very natural generalization. And you can figure out what the analog of the Toft equation is in ADS3. And it turns out that the only thing you have to do is add another term that now depends on G, again, the size of ADS. So in the large G limit, this is not there. That's how you go back to flat space. Okay, and then you can also do some numerical calculations to compute the spectrum of the Toft equation. And this horizontal axis is basically G, and you see the spectrum interpolates between sort of linearly spaced energy values and the Regge behavior, which is at large G here. Okay, so I think my time is up. So I am just gonna put here the summary slide. So this is what we did. ADS 3 segmented strings, we introduced celestial variables, and from that we introduced brain tiling variables. And there is a very nice story how to compute the spectral curve in terms of either of these set of variables. And it turns out that the Toft equation is somehow deep down related to the just the simplest yo-yoing string spectral curve. And there are a bunch of questions some of you asked about these things. First of all, there is an absolute value in the potential for the string, right? It doesn't matter where the two particles are extended this way or that way, you get the same potential. Is there an analytic version of all of this? And I think there is one, so that's a work in progress. I did tell you what the Hamiltonian is for this one degree of freedom system, but I did not write down any Schrodinger equation. I wrote, so this delta, or H, was the Hamiltonian. The spectral curve contained delta squared. So think of some relationship, like a Dirac equation, Klein-Gordon equation, that sort of thing. So there's a question mark here, how to write down the Schrodinger equation. Now, the string you can couple to a background B field in ADS3, and tune the coupling, you go to the WZW model, and a lot is known about that. So you can relate this quantization procedure to Maldacena and Auguri papers. I did not tell you what the Poisson brackets of these celestial variables are. This is a question mark. Another thing is you can try to extend it to ADS5 across S5. This machinery also works on the Sitter space or BTZ, which is locally ADS3. And once you extend it to ADS5 across S5, you can take the many segment limit and try to decouple the longitudinal modes, right? So that's not there in the, for the critical string. Like this yo-yoing string, which moved in 1D, it only had longitudinal modes. So if you manage to decouple that, then maybe this is a first principle derivation of quantum spectral curves for ADS5 and S cross S5. And finally, there was another question about some duals. You can try to build a spin chain dual to this segmented string. So this is all future work. I should stop here.
Sorry, I thought this paper that you mentioned by Zamolodchikov was not for massless quarks.
It was, I think they also have solutions for equal quark masses.
But it's crucial that it's not massless. I was just checking to remind myself, indeed, they stressed this note.
Sorry, I'm talking about the renormalized quark masses.
Right, of course, yeah.
So in the equation, those are zero. So this M1 and M2 are zero in that paper. Or perhaps equal. They also have some results for equal masses.
Just before this, you had a Hamiltonian.
Yes, yes.
Hyperbolic.
Here. Yeah.
What is the origin of that? Is it?
What is the origin of this Hamiltonian? Where I go back one slide, I had the spectral curve, and I just solve for delta.
I see.
That's it.
Oh, you just
I express delta, so this is turning into some cache, which is there, modulo some algebra. And just by analogy, I just define P to be that, and it turns out that they satisfy this SL2 algebra.
So one more question. And then this suggests that you could quantize spectral curve by promoting spectral variables in the computed variables, and then finding a wave function for it. And you say that this corresponds to a quantum string, which have quantum fluctuations.
Yeah, so this equation gives some sort of quantization of this 1D string or the or this string, this four-segmented string.
But and in the plots which you have, like,
oh, the plots. Yeah, so, yeah, here. What were you going to ask?
Yeah, so the question was that, somehow I'm confused because I thought that if you want to quantize, this type of system, you have to quantize not spectral variables, but instead, variables in the phase of, of your string, variables which are corresponding to, entities of the string. And as far as I know, this bipartite graph which you showed is a periodic to the chain bipartite graph.
Yeah, so that case is the Poisson structure is different. You're at the classical level, you have quadratic Poisson brackets. This guy has quartic Poisson brackets. I didn't talk about that, but it's in my paper. It's considerably more complicated. Also non-local, so those brackets are local if you have a long chain. These ones are probably non-local, but I only looked at this four-segmented case. That's also related to just the usual questions about how to quantize the string.
So, you said that you can get your dynamical equations of motion from the mutations, cluster mutations.
Yes.
But in this case, the Poisson bracket is not the usual cluster Poisson bracket.
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, yes, so I also looked at the Goncharov-Kanyon papers. So for every tiling like this, the general tilings, there's a corresponding integrable model, quantum integrable model, but all of those have quadratic Poisson brackets. These ones are not quadratic. More complicated, this is the string. So it's also, note that this closing constraint implies extra conditions, so you should look at some Dirac brackets.
Yeah.
Right? So there are extra, further constraints here.
Yeah, this type of constraints are fine, but yeah, you're saying that Poisson brackets and quadratics is confusing.
Yes, but the tiling variables still, there are 10 different sets of coordinates here on this two-dimensional phase space. I cannot tell you everything in a talk. You can simplify things in this particular case. Whether this story generalizes to n segments, I don't know. It would be amazing, but I doubt it.
I have a question about the vacuum. Is there a good vacuum for your action? Do you want to expand?
Vacuum for my action, meaning?
You have the free fields plus correlations.
Free field?
Nice matrix. Like I said, the vacuum will be nice for the ESPi process by action.
Well,
I guess nobody looked at
that. I did not look, look at it in this case.
Can you show again why this should be related to the equation? So I was distracted.
Yes. So this is this. I think this is the slide. So this is in this paper. You do some kind of integral transformation, and then you do some manipulation of the integral curves, and then you end up with a difference equation. Plus some quantization conditions, which is that Q at zero and plus and minus I are zero.
Okay. And then you have your equation. They don't look the same to me.
Why not?
You don't have a difference equation.
Well, if Q, I promote that to the operator which just multiplies by Q, P is say minus I d over d Q, and I exponentiate that derivative, then I get a shift. So these two guys are precisely these two. And the tanh just becomes, oops, for large Q, it just becomes a sine. Sine of Q divided by Q, so that's just the absolute value of Q. Yeah. In ADS5 cross S5, you have some fourth order equation. That would also be interesting to get that using some brain tiling.